After Donald Trump repeated his lies and dangerous conspiracy theories in front of his mob yesterday, they stormed the Capitol, vandalized politicians' offices, and waved Confederate and pro-Trump flags. Several hours later, after police finally cleared out the rioters, 147 Republicans still voted to challenge Joe Biden's victory. A growing number of politicians are now calling for Donald Trump's removal. What questions do you have about the mob violence we saw yesterday? Join us after the news.
Hello, this is Julie Candler with the BBC.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. As we analyze and ask questions about the assault on the Capitol yesterday, let's begin by talking about how the day started. Before they stormed the Capitol, Trump's mob first met for a rally. And here is what they heard from Rudy Giuliani.
We're wrong, we will be made fools of. But if we're right, a lot of them will go to jail. So, let's have trial by combat.
Trial by combat. That was Rudy Giuliani. And then Donald Trump took the stage to repeat his dangerous lies and conspiracy theories. Here's a clip.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about.
Both Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump spoke behind a large piece of plexiglass. Trump then retreated to the White House and the world witnessed an insurrection as thousands of armed pro-Trump mobs breached the nation's capital by easily passing Capitol Police. Most of the rioters who barged inside were not wearing masks. They smashed windows, vandalized and looted offices, took photos and videos of papers left behind by politicians, and waved Confederate and pro-Trump flags. According to New York Times technology reporter Shira Frankel, yesterday's events were organized on social media. People on far-right sites such as Gab and Parler shared directions on which streets to avoid the police. She reports that at least a dozen people posted about carrying guns into the halls of Congress. On the Senate floor, Mike Pence was removed and senators were told to shelter in place. On the House floor, we saw members of Congress in the balcony taking cover and wearing gas masks. Four people died, according to law enforcement officials. We know that a 35-year-old woman was shot by Capitol Police. She was a Trump supporter, but we don't have any more details because there still hasn't been a briefing on what exactly happened. The National Guard was finally deployed, and in a video, Donald Trump said, quote, "We love you, but go home." Once the extremists and white nationalists were finally removed from the Capitol, many hours later, Congress resumed. After the riots, 147 Republicans still voted to challenge Joe Biden's victory. 147 Republicans. A growing number of politicians are now calling for Donald Trump's removal. Well, joining us to talk about what went down yesterday is Robert Reich, former U.S. Secretary of Labor and professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. Professor Reich served in three national administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton. He's the author of many books, including his most recent, The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. Hi, Professor Reich. Welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Rose.
Well, good morning, Professor Reich. I watched the live Facebook stream that you did yesterday where you took questions from people. Now that you've had time to really think about this and process it, what's going through your mind? How are you feeling this morning?
Well, I'm feeling more outraged and even angrier than I was yesterday, in the sense that this was obviously what occurred yesterday, the culmination of years of incitement by President Trump, of his followers, of others to take action into their own hands. I mean, even before yesterday, he told his followers to come to Washington for a big protest premised on the totally false, baseless assumption that the election was stolen from him. He said, "Be there, we'll be wild." That's what he tweeted. "Be there, we'll be wild." And then on Tuesday, he tweeted, "I hope the Democrats, and even more importantly, the weak and effective RINO," that we're referring to the Republicans in name only section of the Republican Party, "are looking at the thousands of people pouring into D.C. They won't stand for a landslide election victory to be stolen," unquote. Now, this is even before his rally, even before his followers showed up on the Mall. And he told them, you know, "We'll never give up. We'll never concede. It will never happen," and so on. And then I was particularly struck, Rose, afterwards, after Joe Biden, President-elect Biden, had asked Trump to call his mob off. He issued what can only be seen or heard as a mealy-mouthed, a kind of videotaped appeal to go home. But he refused to in any way condemn what they were doing. He refused to give up his false and incendiary claims that the election was stolen. He even paid tribute to them. "We love you. You're very special," he said. Almost reminiscent of the response he gave to the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville in 2017. "Very fine people on both sides," he said at the time. As I ponder this, you ask me how I feel. As I ponder it all, not only the attack on our Capitol yesterday, but also what led up to it and the larger picture, it just seems to me, Rose, that he is either delusional, either out of his mind, or actively, and particularly now that he has lost the election, seeking to incite insurrection against the government of the United States.
To your point, Professor Reich, about Charlottesville, The Guardian's Lois Beckett spoke with Susan Breaux yesterday, the mother of Heather Heyer, the woman who was killed in Charlottesville. And Heather, Susan Breaux said, "This path has always been predictable. And for people to now go, 'I never knew this would happen. Why not? How would you not see this happen?'" Good people on both sides. I mean, this has just been a continuation of Trump. Stand back and stand by. Do you think, Professor Reich, that the media specifically have done an adequate job of really looking at the dangers, the dangerous lies, the dangerous conspiracy theories, and talking about what possibly could happen?
I don't, Rose. I mean, it's not just Facebook and Twitter and Fox News and the right-wing talk radio. I mean, all of them are complicit in this, and they've enabled this to happen. And they've been enablers for 4 or 5 years. But also the mainstream media retreating behind the kind of shield of both sides, false equivalents, you know, calling yesterday, or certainly the media began calling it a protest, and some of the media are still describing it as a protest. That both sides false equivalence, that notion that we're holding back from calling things what they really are, is dangerous. It has been dangerous all along. It was dangerous in Charlottesville. It was dangerous the first time the media refused to call Trump's lies lies. They said, well, he misstated facts and so on. We are dealing, and we certainly saw this yesterday, we're dealing with domestic terrorism. We're dealing with a clear and present danger to democracy. Yesterday was not a protest. It was an insurrection. It was an attempted coup. It was orchestrated and incited by the President of the United States. And there is no way of getting around that. There is no way of getting, I mean, call me old-fashioned, but when armed insurgents breach the Capitol building at the request of a President of the United States, that is an attempted coup. We can't normalize this. We can't forget it. We can't dismiss it. You know, the President of the United States encouraged a militia to attack the seat of the legislative branch and threaten the physical safety of Congress. This has not happened before. This is something frighteningly new.
We are still waiting to get answers about what happened with the Capitol Police. And there have been, and I'm sure you've seen this, these images, Professor Reich. For example, I believe it was in June, on June 2nd, when racial justice protesters were taking to D.C. to protest. You saw so many men in full-on military garb on the steps of the Lincoln Capitol waiting for them. There have been a lot of stories and videos of what happened to water protectors at Standing Rock for defending their land, and they got hit with rubber bullets, tear gas, freezing water in the middle of the night. And yet we knew for weeks that something was going to happen, that some kind of violence could possibly happen. And yet we saw these guys and some women just rush through the gates so easily. Break the windows. It was so surreal, Professor Reich, and I'm sure you felt this way, to see these people on the floor of the House, sitting on Nancy Pelosi's desk. This guy had his feet on her desk. They took pictures off of her walls. They ransacked some of the other offices.
It was surreal and it was frightening. Rose, I don't know how you felt, but I really did have a sense of a kind of apocalyptic nightmare, something that we had, and I have personally dreaded ever since Donald Trump became president, the sense that the chaos and anarchy and destructiveness and violence would come to a head. The kind of boil would be lanced in this way. I mean, the contrast, you're absolutely right. The contrast between what happened yesterday, between the police, the Capitol Police, and the insurrectionists, the vandals, the way the police, the Capitol Police, the DC police treated Black Lives Matter protesters in Washington. When Trump, you remember when Trump sort of made his triumphal march across Lafayette Square, you know, and held the Bible up there, or for that matter, the way he talked and many of his enablers have talked about Black Lives Matter protesters through the Trump years, putting them in the context of rioters and looters and destroyers and talking about law and order and talking and blaming them for anarchy. What we saw yesterday was the quintessence of Trumpism, of hatefulness. There is a vast difference between people who are seeking racial justice and people who are trying to destroy democracy and erect Trump as a dictator. There is a fundamental difference.
Professor Reich, the other thing that's incredible is that, according to officials, there have only been 52 arrests. And a meme that's going around, and I'm sorry I can't attribute this to the person who wrote it. That's what happens pretty regularly on social media, but I think this makes a good point. It says, "We're not asking you to shoot them like you shoot us. We are asking you to not shoot us like you don't shoot them."
Well, exactly. There is a justifiable feeling that the forces of government, the police, I'm talking about now forces that are officially sanctioned to be the guardians of the public, that they are not playing it fair, that they are, in a sense, and particularly there are suspicions yesterday that the Capitol Police allowed in these vandals, these insurrectionists, that they were not prepared. Why couldn't they? How could they not be prepared? Everybody knew that thousands of people were coming to Washington. Everybody knew that, that Trump was having a rally. Everybody knew that he was going to ask them to try to stop the certification process and the certification votes. This was widespread public knowledge. How the police, the D.C. police, the Capitol police, could not have been prepared and better prepared is amazing. There were photographs and there were videos of the Capitol Police opening the doors and allowing these people to just emerge, to leave without any handcuffing, without any attempt to arrest them, without any response. Now, this again, I think, is part of a much larger systemic problem because we have seen again and again this year, last year, we've seen with regard to Black Lives Matter, we've seen with regard to people who have been protesting, whether they are on Native American land and they've been protesting pipelines, it doesn't matter. We've seen law enforcement take a very kind of vicious role in terms of subduing people who are exercising, not rioting, exercising First Amendment rights, many of them. And yet what we saw yesterday was confounding in the extreme opposite.
I mean, many people on Twitter and social media, many Black people, brown people are saying, I get arrested for simply walking to a peaceful protest. And look what these people got away with. There are also, Professor Reich, I saw one video of one of the Capitol Police taking a selfie with one of these rioters.
Rose, in terms of the phrase you just used, getting away with, I want to come back to that because it seems to me that behind all this is the specter of Donald Trump getting away with what he has been getting away with for actually before he became president, certainly the last 5 years. And I don't know about you, but I think that the demand for accountability, when you've got a president who incites his followers to attack the Capitol and stop government from doing what it's doing, trying to preserve his own presidency, and on top of that, refuses to condemn what has occurred, even calls them, says he loves them, and you know, issues kind of positive words. I think that there is a fundamental issue here, not only of accountability, but also what happens for the next 13 days of the Trump presidency. This man is either seriously delusional. I mean, he's been delusional all along, but I think that having lost the election, maybe something flipped in his brain. He is more delusional and more dangerous than he was. Either that, or he is simply out to do whatever he can, whatever it means to stay in office. Either way, this is a dangerous 13 days, Rose. Either way, I think there is a very strong argument to be made for him to be under the 25th Amendment or our impeachment clauses of the Constitution removed from office immediately. You just don't allow this to happen. You don't stand back and say, well, okay, well, this is a president. He can sort of do what he wants to do. No, this is an armed insurrection incited by the president of the United States.
Let's talk about that then. I'm reading from NBC right now. Chuck Schumer, who is going to be the majority leader in just a couple of weeks, is calling on Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office. There are now a number of politicians, Democrats and Republicans, who are calling for this. And according to CNN, to forcibly wrest power from Trump, Pence would have to be on board, according to the text of the amendment. Pence would also need either a majority of Trump's cabinet officials to agree that he is unfit for office and temporarily seize power from him. So, Professor Reich, today is January 7th. Biden is going to be inaugurated on the 20th, so there are 13 days. How do you see this playing out as more and more politicians are calling for Trump to be removed?
Well, it would have to happen, right away. And I think that, again, this is not and should not be viewed as a partisan issue because the election is over. I mean, no, Joe Biden is going to be president. And we know, in fact, the Senate is going to be under the control of Chuck Schumer. These are not questions of what could be or should be. We know that this will happen. The real question is, over the next 13 days, will the president of the United States be held accountable for inciting an armed insurrection against the government of the United States? And will he continue to have the power of the presidency to do things, well, not only the pardoning power, but the power, the nuclear codes? I hate to even bring up that specter, but I have to, because I don't know how it is possible for somebody who incites violence against the government of the United States to be in control of the nation's nuclear codes. Now, I want to go back to the 25th Amendment, because I'm going to read the text to you. It says that whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or another body, as Congress may by law provide, transmit a report, essentially, that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president immediately assumes the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Now, that means, translated into kind of operations today, Pence would have to be on board, but Pence could, with the majority leader of the Senate, the minority leader of the Senate, with the leader, Speaker of the House, Pence could convene a group that Congress has named to essentially decide that Trump is no longer capable of discharging the duties of the presidency. That could happen within the next hour. There is nothing holding anybody back from doing that except Pence's own personal reluctance. Maybe he wants to run for office. Maybe he doesn't want to be disloyal. Maybe he doesn't have the courage. Maybe he's worried about what Trump followers would do. There is also the impeachment clauses of the Constitution. That doesn't mean a long, drawn-out impeachment. There's nothing in the Constitution that says it's got to take weeks. No, that could happen today. The Senate, by two-thirds vote, and the House could together today impeach and convict of impeachment Donald Trump, get him right out of that office. I think they should.
What are you hearing from people on Capitol Hill, Professor Reich? Because we know that so many Democrats tend to say, we need to look forward, not backward. It's time for the country to move on. I mean, that's just what you hear from Democrats for the most part. Jennifer Bendery of the Huffington Post tweeted that the House is not coming back into session until after the inauguration. The Senate has adjourned until January 19th. You have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeting, if the 25th Amendment is not invoked today, Congress must reconvene immediately for impeachment and removal proceedings. So you have a number of progressives really putting pressure on Pelosi, saying we cannot adjourn. We need to invoke the 25th Amendment.
Yes, Congress could reconvene again, within an hour. There's nothing in this day and age stopping Congress from doing that. Congress was doing a lot of business remotely up until the last couple of days. Congress could remotely make all of these decisions. There's no formality that requires a great deal of time here. We are in a national emergency. We saw that yesterday, Rose. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to exaggerate the danger. I just want to be very practical about what has happened. We all saw the Capitol building and our representatives, our senators, the staff, everyone else there under siege. We saw a breach of the Capitol. We saw vandals with guns going into the Capitol. We saw them taking over the offices of our senators and representatives. We also saw Donald Trump egging them on. We saw him urging them initially on, and we saw him at the end calling them, you know, go home, but telling them he loved them and telling them they were wonderful people. You don't need much more evidence. They all experienced it. Everybody in Congress, they know how dangerous this man is. Now, what am I hearing? I have a lot of friends and acquaintances and former peers and people I worked with in Washington, and I've been on the phone with them since yesterday. And many of them want to move immediately to the 25th Amendment or impeachment or both. Many of them are being urged to do so by surprising sources like the business community, the National Association of Manufacturers, who when I was in Washington I was battling them very often. They went on record. They have gone on record as saying the 25th Amendment should be used right away. And again, Chuck Schumer this morning saying that it ought to be the 25th Amendment. And if Pence won't do it, then Congress needs to move and impeach and remove. I think this could and should happen quite soon.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we are talking about the violence that we saw in Washington, D.C. yesterday with Professor Robert Reich. And if you have any questions or comments, we will take those after a break, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on our media roundtable tomorrow, we will continue this discussion about the attacks on the Capitol. How should this event be put in a historical context? What is the media's role? We will also talk about the historic Democratic victories in Georgia. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Robert Reich, former U.S. Secretary of Labor and professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. His most recent book is The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. If you'd like to join us to talk about your thoughts on what happened yesterday, how do you think Democrats and politicians should respond? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Donna in Berkeley. Hi, Donna. Welcome to the show. Hello. Do we have Donna? All right, let's try William in Belvedere.
I'm right here.
Oh, hi, Donna. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you for having this program and Professor Reich for being very clear about how dangerous President Trump is, how he gave permission for this coup to happen, for the police to stay away, to allow this to very awful thing to happen to the Congress and to the Capitol. I'm very worried, obviously, about our national security and about Donald Trump still being the president. And as you mentioned, the nuclear codes. And I just don't understand. I know that they had to certify the Electoral College vote yesterday. That was first. Now it needs to invoke the 25th. And I'm worried he's going to think about his political future and sit on his hands. And I just don't understand, you know, and I'm very worried that nothing will happen. Mm. And well, what can we do? What, you know, I mean, it's really hard to wait to see them do the right thing. And they have to. This man cannot breach our national security any further. As you said, no one has ever done this to our capital and to our country, to our people. It's just very scary, and Pence has to act, and he has to do it for the country and not for himself.
Well,
so
thank
I
you
would
for,
like to hear.
Thank you for calling in, Donna. Professor Reich, what can people do about this?
We've got to understand that there are two options here. One is the 25th Amendment, and that does require Vice President Pence's active involvement. We don't know right now, at this moment, at this hour, the extent to which he has been in discussions with members of Congress, and maybe that's going on. I have some reason to believe it is, but again, that's no guarantee. But there is another process that ought to be happening simultaneously, and that is impeachment. And I want to emphasize that normally impeachment is a long, drawn-out deal. We went through impeachment with Donald Trump. He also has to be convicted of impeachment in the Senate. No president has been convicted of impeachment, but I think that it is possible now it's possible to get the two-thirds, possible to get two-thirds of the Senate because of the danger. And Donna, you're absolutely right. This is what worries me. It's not just the issue of accountability. If it was just the issue of accountability, we could conceivably hold Donald Trump accountable after the election. We could wait until he's out of office. Maybe then some sort of proceeding or some sort of criminal action against sedition could be mounted. But beyond that issue of accountability is exactly the issue, Donna, that you raised, and that is national safety and security right now. And remember, the president has extraordinary powers. This man, Donald Trump, has shown that he is willing to do anything to hold on to power. Lying, not just calling up state election officials and browbeating them, not just threatening, not just everything we've seen to date, but also inciting people to attack members of Congress and our Capitol and our process of government. I'm nervous, frankly, that he has the power he does. And it's not just the nuclear codes, but yes, I am nervous about somebody like that having nuclear codes. And I want to stress, impeachment can happen very quickly. It could happen in one day. There is nothing in the Constitution that requires a long, drawn-out process. So now the next part of your question is, well, what can we do? Leader Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, is presumably here with us. She is in San Francisco. I think we, all of us, need to write her, call her, every other member of Congress we know or we are constituents of, including our senators, our members of Congress, and let them know that we want this man, Donald Trump, out of office immediately, not in 13 days, but right now. Because the national security of this country depends on it. We are in a national emergency after yesterday.
Well, we will definitely reach out to Pelosi's office to see if she can come on for even 5 minutes to answer some of these important questions. A related question from Philip. He writes, what can be done to prevent Trump from issuing a blanket pardon to himself and his goons for yesterday's atrocity?
Philip, there's nothing that can be done to stop Trump from issuing a blanket pardon, and he may very well. He may pardon himself. He may pardon his family, pardon everybody else who has been participating in any aspect of Donald Trump's illegalities over the past 4 years. Now, there is technically the ability of Congress, without the president, to convict, and although it sounds a little far out, but yesterday was pretty far out, imprison people who breach the Capitol walls and who vandalize the Capitol. The Congress does have that power, and that is beyond the pardon power. Even saying it seems a little far-fetched, but it has happened before. Congress actually has imprisoned people, not for doing this, but imprisoned people who have violated congressional norms or have, in two instances, simply not responded to subpoenas. And they've imprisoned those people in the Capitol. Now, this is in the 19th century, but Congress does have separate powers from the president with regard to pardoning and conviction and imprisoning.
Well, thank you for that email. We've got a number of calls and emails, Professor Reich, so why don't we go through a few calls and then we'll get your response. Let's go to William in Belvedere. Hi, William.
Yes, thank you. With all due respect to Professor Rice, I think he's dreaming. Those Republicans who tied themselves to Trump are not about to throw him out of office. But what I think it was I saw something positive in what happened yesterday. And it's sometimes little things mean a lot, as the song goes. Predominantly, the invaders, whatever you want to call them, the rioters, were not armed to take over the government. Anyone who thinks that was an armed insurrection hasn't studied what armed insurrections are all about. I think they were thinking things very logically, and they knew that they would not be shot. Or otherwise, they either wouldn't have done it, or they would have come more heavily armed to deal with that. If someone's breaking down your door, there's not a state in this nation where you wouldn't be considered justified in shooting them. And yet, when I saw the doors being broken down and nobody was shooting the people who were breaking down the doors of the home of our government, I said, there's something wrong with this picture. And indeed, I think it revealed a lot that they were quite rightly not afraid of being shot. If a few of them had been shot, the others would have gone away. So that's my perspective.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but sadly, tragically, one woman we know who did try to get in, a vandal, an insurrectionist, she was shot and she was killed.
Yes, actually, we do have information about her. The New York Times just posted about an hour ago. Her name is Ashley Babbitt. She's a former member of the Air Force. And we know that three other people were shot, but we don't know the details. Professor Rice, a number of people have been very surprised and angry about the fact that we haven't had a briefing yet to figure out what actually happened yesterday.
Yes, I'm surprised, too. And again, you would think that the Capitol Police, the D.C. Police, the Department of Defense, that there would be some sort of briefing. The public has a right to know exactly and specifically, and Congress has a right to know. Members of Congress should demand that at least. But if I could, Rose, I just wanted to respond to William's point about dreaming about the possibility of impeachment. What you would need in the Senate is all 49 Democrats, but you only need 17 of the Republican members of the Senate to go along, and he would be impeached. Ken, is it dreaming to think that there might be 17 responsible members of the Republican Party in the Senate? Maybe, but you don't need all of them by any stretch of the imagination. And yesterday, I was struck by the fact that in the Senate, many of them who said before yesterday that they would object to the certification, actually, they did not object. They went along with the certification. They were so appalled by what had happened. So I think it's not dreaming. I think it's possible.
Well, thank you for calling, William. You know, I also heard from a number of people of color yesterday who said white people are not afraid of being shot. They went in there, they tore down the fences, they broke the windows. They were not afraid of being shot. Other officials said that because some of the people were armed, according to the New York Times, at least a dozen people posted about carrying guns into the halls of Congress, that it could have been a bloodbath. If cops started to shoot, they could have shot back. And that, of course, would have been absolutely horrific. So thank you for the call. Let's go next to Mark in San Leandro. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show. Let's go to Joseph in Emeryville. Hi, Joseph. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Professor Reich, I want to ask you this. Putting Donald Trump himself aside for a moment, what do you think about the state of this nation that so many people are willing to believe and follow him? I find that more disturbing than Trump himself.
I find that disturbing, Joseph. And certainly that's a legacy that we're going to have to deal with, a legacy of Trump. Not just the 70-odd million people who voted for him, but the percentage of that 70 million or 72 million who believe him and believe not just Donald Trump, but all his amplifiers, Fox News and right-wing radio, and all of the ways in which his lies became a kind of certainty. His narrative, his fake narrative, became a reality to these tens of millions of Americans. Now, it's interesting in this regard. Facebook has decided today take down Donald Trump's account, to limit, to actually banish him from Facebook for the time being. I don't know. I don't think it's beyond the inauguration day. Twitter also had a temporary closing of his accounts. I think that there are a lot of enablers who made it possible for Donald Trump to convince tens of millions of Americans that lies were the truth, that his view of reality was actually the truth, the reality that they should adhere to as well. He's going to be gone, but his enablers, many of them are still there. And I think it's important that we discuss them. They are in many ways responsible for what happened yesterday.
We're going to talk more about this tomorrow and in the weeks to come, Professor Reich, but I think we also need to spend more time talking about the racism, the white nationalism, the anti-Semitism. For example, I saw on social media and now NBC News, a noose was erected outside of the Capitol, a noose. And, you know, sorry for all of this, but the anti-Semitism, the Proud Boys wore shirts with 6MWE, 6 million was not enough. There was a Camp Auschwitz sweatshirt. And Professor Reich, this really needs to be discussed. I mean, I think about Charlottesville and those young guys saying Jews will not replace us.
It's a continuation of Charlottesville, Rose. I mean, Donald Trump, for the past 4.5 years, has been inciting not just what we saw yesterday, but inciting hate, giving legitimacy to hate groups, to fringe groups in this country. Racism squared. I mean, look at the Confederate flags we saw yesterday. I mean, we've seen them before, but there was a Confederate flag hoisted over the Capitol. You know, the white nationalism, white supremacy, anti-Semitism, xenophobia, misogyny. I mean, these have all come to the front because they've been fanned. All of these flames were there before, but they were fueled and flamed and inflamed by Donald Trump. We've got to face that. You're absolutely right. That's a reality. It's not that. I want to emphasize something, and people, I think, need to understand the architecture of all of this. America has always had hate groups. America has always had a kind of paranoid, angry, xenophobic, anti-Semitic, racist element. But we have not had a president in modern years who has legitimized and fueled it. And that's the difference. You know, hopefully Joe Biden is going to douse some of these flames, but it can't be only Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not a messiah. Joe Biden can't do it by himself. He can bring in a great administration, and so far he looks like he is, but it's up to all of us. All of us have got to do what we can to fight hatefulness.
I also want to ask you, Professor Reich, we have about 5 minutes left. Hours after all of this happened, the rioters finally were removed from the Capitol. And again, there are so many questions that we need to answer. We have an email from Patricia who says, Were the insurrectionists politely led to the door and told to go home and think about what they've done? Were photos and ID taken of everyone before they were allowed to leave? I mean, the amazing thing, Patricia, is so many of these guys, and again, some women, did not wear masks. So they were photographed. They were on video. We don't know what is going to happen in terms of arrests, charges. The D.C. police chief says there was no intelligence of the Capitol breach before the attack. An FBI director says the feds are, quote, determined to find those responsible for a Capitol assault. Hopefully we'll have some more answers today and we can bring you more information tomorrow. But there are still so many questions we have yet, and that they have not been answered yet. Professor Rice, once Congress reconvened, it was actually shocking to see that 147 Republicans still voted to challenge Joe Biden's victory. Maybe it wasn't shocking, but a lot of people thought that after we saw these riots that they would not challenge Biden's victory. People like Matt Gaetz, I mean, he was repeating dangerous conspiracy theories. So what are your thoughts about this? Because Trump is leaving on January 20th, but these Republicans will still be in D.C.
Yeah, so that's part of the legacy. That's part of the most dangerous Trump legacy, because these people in Congress who are mouthing these conspiracy theories and these lies, they are doing it because they are either lacking in courage. They're worried about being primaried. They're worried about losing their seats. They're worried about Trump voters and how Trump voters are going to react to them. Or they have this kind of false sense of allegiance to Trump. Or they simply have ambitions for higher office. Some of them, like Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz, they obviously want to be president. They plan to run in 2024. Again, the responsibility is on all of us, Rose, to make sure that they do not become president. They do not get reelected. I think everybody who voted yesterday against the certification on the basis of nothing, on the basis of no evidence, I think that they should not be reelected. We all of us have a responsibility not to make sure that they are not reelected. It was the inevitable yesterday culmination of the refusal by Republican lawmakers to acknowledge Donald Trump's psychological and moral unfitness to govern for 4 years, and plus the eagerness of Fox News personalities and other grifters to take full advantage of his malignant narcissism for years and years. I don't know if they have learned anything. If they haven't learned anything, we have to teach them.
Well, his Republican enablers will still be in office. And in many cases, it's so hard to get these people out of office because of gerrymandering. His supporters will also still be on the streets. And a lot of people, Professor Reich, are asking today, if Congress fails to act, what message does this send to these rioters?
I think it sends a terrible message, and it's the same terrible message that Donald Trump has been sending for the last 4 years, Rose. It's that they can get away with it, and their grievances expressed as they do through hatefulness are entirely legitimate. Now, I know we have just a minute left, but let me just say this, because I think that underlying a lot of the Trump supporters' grievances, the sense of being left behind, the sense of a failed economy, of wages that are dropping, of a system that is rigged against them. I think that those are legitimate grievances. The problem is that Trump has taken those grievances and channeled them into violence and racism and hatefulness, and that's what we have to work on, both how Trump has channeled them and the legacy that Trump has left us with, but also the underlying grievances, the reality and the legitimacy of some of those underlying grievances. They also have to be addressed.
And just briefly, Professor Reich, we'll have you back to talk about this, but the COVID cases are still off the charts. I mean, what public health workers are dealing with is horrific. And unfortunately, there's probably going to be another wave because of what we saw in D.C. yesterday with people gathering, screaming, no masks. A lot of people are suffering. They cannot pay their rent. They cannot feed their families. The Democrats now have the Senate. And Professor Reich, people are saying if the Democrats do not deliver and make a tangible difference in people's lives, they could lose the House in 2022, and we could get someone worse than Trump in 2024.
I think that's true, Rose. I think the Democrats, we have a reprieve. It's not just the Democrats. The country, America, has a little bit of a reprieve now. We ducked a bunch of bullets, and I'm sorry to use that metaphor. But metaphorically, in terms of electing Joe Biden and now having a Senate and a House that are also Democratic, so that Joe Biden can really do the things that need to be done, we have a reprieve, but it is only a short reprieve. It's 2 years before the midterms and 4 years before another presidential election. I can't express this more dramatically than I am going to say it right now. Joe Biden and all of us pushing him and his administration and pushing the Democrats and pushing whichever Republicans can be pushed in Congress, we have got to do something that is big enough and powerful enough and strong enough and bold enough to change the direction this country has been moving in. Now, that may be a giant infrastructure project with regard to creating huge number of jobs that have to do with stopping climate change. It may be Medicare for all. I know Joe Biden is not interested in that, but something on that scale. We cannot think small now. We have got to think as large as our imaginations and the situation we are dealing with now in this country, the crises we're dealing with, demand.
Robert Reich is former U.S. Secretary of Labor and professor of public policy at UC Berkeley. He's the author of many books, including The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It. Professor Reich, thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you, Rose.
Thank you. We have a number of emails from listeners who have called Speaker Pelosi's office in San Francisco and in D.C. They're saying that her voicemail is full and is not accepting any messages. So clearly people are inundating her voicemail. You can also send an email. We will reach out to her. I have to be honest, it's really hard to get these politicians to come on the show even for 5 minutes. But we will continue to reach out to her office to see if we can just ask her a couple of basic questions about what is happening and what Democrats plan to do. And I hope you can join us tomorrow. Sorry we didn't get to all of your emails and calls, but I'll keep your questions for tomorrow's show because we will talk about how the media should put this all in historical context and really what role they played around all of this with, you know, giving Trump 24/7 coverage and possibly not really being honest about who his supporters really are. So I hope you can join us for that show tomorrow. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr and Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running and engineering the show. You can find out more and listen to past shows at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.